Hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
Welcome to Sacred Matrix, a divine paradigm of love and universal consciousness, with your host, Janet Kira Lesson and Dr. Sasha Lesson.
Together, we transform the world.
And now, here are your hosts, Janet Kira and Dr. Sasha Lesson.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sacred Matrix on Revolution Radio, Studio B. And we have a panel today, our three co-hosts, Janet Kira Lesson, Dr. Sasha Alex Lesson, and Deborah DeFranco. And let's see, I didn't get the bios in, so I'll have to add those later. But we're going to kind of talk about the current events, what's going on in the news, what's going on in the media. Different perspectives on different things. So I'm just going to go around and let everybody do a mic check. And Deborah DeFranco is our producer. She's joined us as the new producer of our two shows on Revolution Radio, Sacred Matrix, and Stargate to the Cosmos. So, Dr. Sasha, are you there? Can you say hello and
add
anything that you want?
Can you hear me, Janet? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello, Janet? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, wow. You people out in radio land, shout back. Can you hear me? Louder. I can't hear you. Anyway, listen. What I've got to say about what's going on today, it comes from I'm an anthropologist, a PhD in anthropology, and I can tell you now from the research that we've really gone into from real ancient work that we were black and white from the get-go, from the very beginning. And I will go into it. There was two sets of Adams and two sets of Eves that our geneticists created us out of. And we're going to I'll have a chance to talk to you how that came about and also about the way this comes down into, and one of the things these people ultimately did, they made us for slaves. And it's the legacy of slavery that we're dealing with all over the planet today in the Black Lives Matter. And I can tell you, from our deep studies, is that when a group is oppressed, that it's perfectly natural for them to feel anger. And if they turn that anger into understanding, then it comes to effective action. I think that's just where we are now. My studies lead me to conclude that the time has come for us to have a new age, and that this was presaged by our founders, the Anunnaki. We'll talk about that. And this is it. It's coming about. It may seem tumultuous because it's a perturbation that shakes us all up, but in the end, it's going to be good.
Okay, thank you. What do you
want
to talk about today?
Well, I want to talk about the movie The Fourth Kind that's on Amazon Prime right now, that is about a series of suspected alien abductions, ET abductions, in Nome, Alaska.
Is that the new production? Is that the one that was out a few years ago? I think
saw it. This is a brand new production that was made in 2020. That's a remake of the one a few years ago. Now, the difference in the one that they made this year is that it overlays real video from the case, from the therapist that was doing the sessions with all the patients that were reporting very abnormal things going on in their lives. Several of them committed suicide and actually killed their families out of sheer terror for what they saw and the memories that they recalled and recovered. Now, this therapist actually videotaped these sessions, had other doctors come in. And so in the movie, because there's a lot of naysayers out there about this case, so in the movie, they split screen and show the real video from the therapist records, along with the artistic movie side by side, so that it's done to kill the doubts, because there's a lot of misinformation out on the internet about this case.
If you can get that link and send it to me, I'll put it up on the show page. We have a show page on AquarianRadio.com. I don't know why people call when they know I'm on the radio. Okay. And
can I link the movie that's on? It's on Amazon Prime. Is there a way to post that as a link?
I'm looking now. I see The Fourth Kind from 2009. Oh, it's called The Fifth Kind? No,
it's The Fourth Kind. Here, I'm going to pull it up.
If you go to the navigation bar, you click on the movie, and then you go to, not sure how you send it. Anyway, I'm getting the old one, unless they would have.
No, this is a brand new one that was released in 2020.
We will take care of these technical things, and let's go on with the content right now, please.
Okay, so anyway, so you're saying they overlaid the original...
No, the story is, it's a therapist in Nome, Alaska. Nome, Alaska is an isolated city in Alaska, and the only way to get there is to fly in. There's no ferries and there's no roads. There's about 3,000 people that live in this town. So this woman was living somewhere else and was coming to Alaska and doing therapy on a regular basis. And then she moved her kid, her husband and her family moved up there to do some research. Her husband was initiating the research and he dies. She has a memory that he was murdered. But at the end of the movie, it shows something different. I don't want to give the movie away for anybody that hasn't watched it. Right? And what the police are implying is that she had a screened memory, that it wasn't the correct memory of what actually happened. Now, in the movie, her daughter gets kidnapped. There's actually video, but it's very distorted, because every time video of the ETs, there's interference. So it's not clear. So bits and pieces are coming through. But the doctor, in all the sessions with her patients, when she started noting the similarities, she found the similarities in 300 people. So it wasn't just a few people. And they were all coming to her with the same symptoms and reporting seeing the same animal, an owl, which is often in the screened memories that the ETs leave, right?
Right.
Now, her and her children get kidnapped. Her and her son get returned. The daughter doesn't get returned. And so these other doctors that are assisting her, they actually do a regression on her. And during the regression, they all get kidnapped. And it's on video. Now, in these videos, she videotapes all of this. So they took the videotapes from her personal records and overlaid them with the movie shots. So you can see where there's similar, similar scenes to the actual video, the actual events. So this isn't in relation to the old movie. It's in relation to the doctor's video files of these patients and of her meetings with the other doctors. Now, Sasha, you'll find this very interesting. In the video that was captured, they're speaking, the ETs are speaking ancient Sumerian. Now, right before her... Yes, right before her husband died, he reached out to a doctor who had spent his career studying ancient Sumerian. And after her husband gets murdered, she realizes her memories may not be correct or she's not recalling everything. So she goes back to the scene of the murder to see if she can discover anything that will help her figure out what happened. She finds this doctor's number in a book that her husband was reading. And so she called the doctor. And so they started talking. The doctor immediately came to visit her. So there's real recordings of them talking, again, overlaid with the movie version of it. So they'll do the split screen wherever they have a video from the doctor's records, similar to a scene in the movie. They split screen it so you can see that it matches the real event. Because there's, like I said, there's a lot of naysayers out there saying this didn't happen. At the end, they don't bring you to a conclusion. They encourage you to develop your own conclusion, but they point out particular facts. After her case, the FBI has come to Nome 250 times. Now, Anchorage, which is not too far investigating this, they have come to Anchorage 350 times. They will not explain why they've come and why they visit. At one point, she was brought up on charges for possibly being involved in her husband's murder and in her daughter's kidnapping. Now, her daughter has never come back. Now, on the tape, the ETs are talking in ancient Sumer, where they said she's the daughter. They're going to keep her and never bring her back.
Wow.
But you've got to watch this movie. It's the new one. And I think because of all the people saying what happened in Nome isn't true and this and that, there are over 24 people that lived in Nome that disappeared between 1967 and 2000 when this happened. And there's no trace of them anywhere. No traces of their disappearance, no traces of people being involved in it, nothing. And they've never returned. And no, they've not located the bodies. Now, the argument is this is a very remote part of Alaska. It's extraordinary. It's wild wilderness on a scale that none of us are used to. And they say missing people is not unusual. You know, you can walk off into that forest and get lost and you'll never come out and people will never find you. And they say that happens all the time. But I find it unusual that over 24 people went missing and there's no trace. All ages, all walks of life, all different things. Like they would be on an errand and never make it, never show up and never come back again. So I'm trying to do more research. There just wasn't a lot out there about the case. And like I said, when you look at the facts that they present, it's very, very hard not to believe what you're seeing.
I found it, and I put the link up on my Aquarian Radio page for today's show. They've changed the name to Close Encounters of the Fifth Time. Contact has begun. Dr. Stephen Greer and Daniel Sheehan.
No, that's not it. That's not the movie. These have like all stars in it. Hold on. Let me see if I can get it real quick.
Oh, anyway, we'll go on to something else. I found one with. Okay, so this is a different one. Can't find the one you're talking about. It's still. There's one up that's coming up that says Close Encounters of the fourth kind, and this is Close Encounters of the fifth kind. Contact has begun. All right, we'll find it and we'll put it up on AquarianRadio.com. Anything else you want to say on that? Sounds very interesting. I will definitely watch it, and we can do a follow up report on it next. See if we can.
Oh, you know
find
what?
Out
You're
before.
Right. It's called the fourth kind. It was made in 2008. I'm sorry. I don't know why I thought it was 2020. It's got Mila Jovovich, Will Patton, some very famous actors in this.
Yeah, I saw when it came out originally. Go ahead, Sash.
Well, Deborah, if you were going to imagine what's behind all this and just in wild intuition or whatever, what do you think's happening in this case?
I do believe that ETs are kidnapping people, but not for the reasons that people believe, right? I believe they created us, right? And they're concerned about what we're doing on this planet and what we're doing to ourselves. I mean, we have not been kind stewards of the planet. And we have a lot of diseases and illnesses, and COVID being one of them, that we're causing because of our poor stewardship. Now they're trying, I believe they're trying to make sure we're healthy. I also believe that they're using our DNA to repopulate other planets, because I believe that's what the process is, right? You create a planet, you create an environment, you take species from similar planets or similar environments and try to adapt them to the new planet. I think seeding planets is something that has gone on for a very, very long time. And I say, I believe it continues to go on. I believe the ETs are abducting people to make sure they're okay and to monitor our health and our DNA throughout the process of humanity existing on this planet. And I'll hand the baton off to you.
Okay. What do you want to say, Sash?
Wow. wait just a second. Just fiddle for something while I recover myself.
We are their people. I believe they're trying to monitor us and take care of us, because if they wanted us, they could take us. If they've got the technology to do everything we believe they have, and we see that their presence has been here thousands and thousands of years before human in this incarnation were here. So they obviously have the technology to do things that are unimaginable to us.
I got what I was trying to think of. I don't know if the researchers looked at what I would look at, which is what are the behaviors of these people that were abducted. And my first fantasy was they took all the litter bugs for littering in whatever level that was, all the polluters, these were people that either needed correction, or there might have been a multiplicity of causes, like somebody's really fertile or they have red hair or something like that. That was it. They could. What are the characteristics of those that were taken would be critical data from my perspective.
I agree, because one of the things I've found in my research is they have a tendency to take people that are very submissive and don't question things, right? I've studied that people who are very strong-minded, they have a difficulty planting those screened memories, right? People who are strong-minded and not easily manipulated, I think they leave alone. It's the ones that they can easily manipulate are the ones that they have a tendency to abduct.
See, I have a slightly different take on it. I think that it's their technologies and how they implant and mind wipe are so far in advance to us. It's like we're like chickens and cows to them. They're looking for other characteristics and qualities. And it's often a certain blood or a lineage. George Casavillas was saying that they have taken every human being alive on this planet that's ever lived, and periodically take them up until they're like in their late teens or something, and then they select the ones for their program that are going to work out the best, and then they continue to contact them sometimes their entire lives, sometimes in previous lives, so they got the certain type of soul relationship that goes beyond the current incarnation. So that's what my research is showing. Sash, you have anything to add to that?
No.
I have a question, though.
Okay.
Who is they, and what is their program?
The Anunnaki.
Go ahead, Jeanette.
I thought you were going to... You want me to go? Okay. No. Well, it appears to be a number of species. There's a program... the grays are part of it. There's tall whites. There's mantis. There's a mantis mix. There's the Anunnaki. We're not sure what the program is fully, but it seems that they are trying to up-level the vehicles in which we can have incarnations. So this has been going on for a long time. Some of us have been, you know, cross-pollinated and bred. We have alien DNA, so they use the best, what they're trying to create something from all of these different species. And our soul origins are often different planets, not just human Earth origin souls and human Earth bodies. But the end result, they created this metagene, which is the ability to communicate all the way to source while you're in a form and an avatar. It's like a high-level ability that it took generations and generations to finally create. And now it was so long ago, I don't know. There's something about the story they don't remember how they created it, or they created it by accident. So they're testing for this metagene, which these are highly advanced souls and beings. So that's part of what they're doing. They're searching for the metagene and how to reproduce that. Is that what you recall from, I forget which person was explaining that to us. You remember, Sash? Where you got that from?
Penny Bradley was telling us about it. Penny has a lot of information on the metagene. But long ago when Enki decided to breed a special line of slaves, he started always educating the smartest of the kids that he begat with the slave race. That's us, in what was called the Snake Society. And basically he was saying, when the time is right and the environmental press is correct, then genes will be activated in you that have been latent until the right time. And now is the right time for this, the time for the new Yuga. The Kali Yuga is over, the age of the Satya Yuga, the age of Aquarius, or Enki, Lucifer, is here. And we're just going through the perturbations as the Kali Yuga, the dinosaur, thrashes its last.
Great. So you were tying something into Anunnaki, or what information did you want to present to us today, Sash?
Oh, I was just what I was just going to talk about is how it came about that we came about, and there was actually a lot of different things were conflated in the Bible and its various permutations, but basically there was two really big creations, two Adams and two Eves. The Anunnaki are these great big people from the planet Nibiru, which comes through the inner solar system here every 3,600 years. It did in those days anyway. And 450,000 years ago, they came and they were looking for gold. They found it in Southeast Africa, and they were shipped it up the Persian Gulf and flew it to a base on Mars, transshipped it to their planet, where it was transformed into white powder of monatomic gold and filled up a hole in their ionosphere that they had created by thermonuclear war. And so they had miners, people from their planet, thought they were going to save their planet, and they volunteered, and they came to Earth, and they were under the ground for a long, long time. No sex, not enough beer, and so forth. They were on the verge of mutiny, and their head scientist, who'd been experimenting with Homo erectus, which was an intelligent hominoid, he was already on the planet, from the seeding that had happened as a result of the Council of Hatona on Andromeda many hundreds of thousands of years before that. But in any case, Homo erectus was in Africa, and the scientist, Lucifer, was just utterly fascinated by Homo erectus, because Homo erectus was telepathic, could seem to phase in and phase out even sometimes, but was letting all the other animals out of his traps. And He looked at this and said, "This is an amazing being. This is it's a human of some kind, and it's telepathic, and it's compassionate." The Anunnaki, my people, are just warmongers. They're dominator consciousness. They have no compassion. They've got to talk all the time. And so I bet you I could use our genome with their genome and make a new species here. I'll foment the miners to revolt, and then I'll come up with my solution. I've got a slave species I can make. And so that's exactly what happened. And when he made the slave species, the boss came down and said, "What is this your experiment you're doing? I want you to get, you know, keep these guys working. And if they don't work, volunteers, just execute them." And he said, "Hey, no, we ain't got to do that, bro. All we got to do is we'll make obedient slaves." And so he had a big fight about it, and the compromise, well, okay, you can make slaves, but they got to be clones. I don't want breedables. Okay, deal. However, they made them breedable, and that was the first, the boss wanted to see him, so he came up out from Africa up to their place in at Basra in the Persian Gulf, and the boss, that's Yahweh, and Leal, who was next door, came by to see these creatures that were just supposed to be. They made a female clone too, and so they could amuse each other with sex. But they weren't breedable as far as the boss was concerned. And he sees this little girl. She's obviously pregnant. She's not a little girl. She's like, you know, 15 or 16. And she comes right up to him all chatty. Look at the clothes I made, and see this table I'm making. And she was, you know, just talking like a chatty little girl. And the boss, Yahweh, was immensely enraged. He said, "You were just supposed to make clones," he says to Lucifer. Get these things out of here. Go have them breed in Africa. So anyways, that was 300,000 years ago. The first, and these were children they made from zygotes with the Homo erectus, plus their genes, plus they put the fertilized zygotes in Anunnaki women. And so there are two different Anunnaki women, and so you get two different babies. And the first girl that they, first boy that they made that way was a brown boy. His skin was red-brown, like the clay of Africa, and he had dark, kinky hair, and he was just like Nibiran boys, except he had a foreskin, which they lack. And that came out of Nimma or Lilith. The first girl came out of a blonde mother, Damkina, Lucifer's wife. And she was a sandy blonde with blue eyes. So, from the get-go, Tiamat was the girl, you know, Adamu was the boy, Adamu was brown, Tiamat was white. So that's our heritage. We are all like this from the get-go. And so that's something to know. And 200,000 years ago, when these original slaves, it was hard times, they finally said, "We've had, times are tough. We're not going to, what's with this yellow stuff that we keep digging out of the earth? Let's go off in the African bush and have our own lives," and they started mutinying and living their own lives and creating their own cultures. And so the boss, Yahweh, says to Lucifer, you better make me some better slaves. And by better, he meant that they obey him. And so Lucifer said, I know how to do that. So he went and found two of the prettiest, and he had kids with them. And then it goes on and on. That's the second one. That's when you get the Cain Abel story that you all know. There's been lots and lots of incursions, including when the astronaut corps revolted and ran off with the prettiest of this latest batch of slaves and started living in Canaan. These are all the giants of old. But anyway, that's a little bit of our story. But the point is that we have been black and white, brown and white from the very get-go. And there were already other people here from the days of Atlantis and other people in the Chinese area. Just that the stories we get from Sumer or from Iraq and Turkey are from Iraq and Turkey, where these Anunnaki were. But there's other extraterrestrials all over the planet from all different time frames and so forth. That's a little bit of what you might want to kick around.
So we're looking at the history of slavery. So from the very get-go, we were created as slaves to mine the gold. And so there's a long history of slavery. Sasha has this incredible library of books, a lot of historical books. And all throughout time, you see one powerful group of people come in and conquer and enslave another group. People, and sometimes they're the same color skin, sometimes they're different color skin, a different tribe, some come from another part of the world, and they come by boat or march and somehow penetrate their defenses. And then next thing you know, they're killing most of the men, grabbing the women, making babies with them, and you know, and basically they're slaves. Can you tell us a little bit more of the connection between the first original slaves and you're the historian, honey. What's the next generation? Who was the next that you would call?
Certainly. What happened is as soon as any of these people get free, the first thing they do is enslave their neighbors. And as they recover after Noah's flood, and the Anunnaki spared Noah and his sons were supposed to rule for them. And the first thing all of these different people with different kingdoms wind up doing is getting the people from the hills to build their cities, getting conquering the people in the next door neighborhood and using them. So that's the very next thing. All the Anunnaki start slaving on their own and stealing each other's slaves. And the worst form of slavery that we've always had is military corvée. Hey, kid, take this weapon. Go kill people you don't even know and cut off heads and do all these things, and they'll kill you too. Groovy. You know, well, that's part of dominator consciousness, which has been ours from the get-go by these Anunnaki. But you know what? They've evolved too. They really have. You know, and so there's been some really big events. And part of when you see people with a metagene, people like the Buddha, like Jesus, like Leonardo, you see there is something very, very special of people that can break the dominator consciousness. And the person that did it, first of all, in a big way, was Lilith or Nimma. And basically in her domains, which were Turkey and areas like that, especially after Yahweh nuked Sodom and Gomorrah and Canaan. But in Lilith's area, the great goddess area, there was partnership. No one had to be dominant. There wasn't a hierarchy. There isn't a religion with people telling you what to do. There was trade. There wasn't walled cities. There was no slavery. There, women had high positions. It was really different. And then when Satan, that's Lucifer's son, Marduk, winds up as Zeus, conquering the rest of the Minoan empire, the area that Lilith had her partnership society going in. Then after that, when it's the Greeks and the Romans, you've got that. That's basically Satan, Marduk versus the people down in the Canaan area. And that's Yahweh. And these two royal lineages are fighting it out and then intermarrying and dominating the world. But there's lots of other high civilizations that were happening all over the planet, it's way more complex than that. But the history that we have from Sumer, from Iraq, is the stuff that the winners wrote. But then people who started writing what they wrote had to keep modifying it to justify their political position of domination over other people. And if you study the Bible, you can see exactly where, first of all, they're trying to get whatever the Anunnaki taught them. And then another group comes in and they're reinterpreting and trying to make women to blame for everything bad that ever happened. It goes on and on. You can just see who. Then the crazy Jamie gets to be king of England, and he's all after witches. I mean, wow. It's so obvious that people are just talking about abductions and things like that in the terms that they and the symbols that they had, just like we do in terms of the symbols that we have. But it's the same phenomena. I pass.
Sasha,
Deborah,
can I ask a question? How many different seeding events do you think have taken place on our planet, if you had to estimate?
How many different what kind of events?
Seeding events. Like I asked you this question a few months ago, and I said there was multiple seeding events. The Anunnaki weren't the only ones, right?
Oh, yes. It's very difficult to say how many, but I can tell you about the story that we get from a whole bunch of different records. Humanoid people, Lyrans, we're all descended from the Lyrans who were attacked by the Dracos, as they they came here, they fought wars with the Dracos and so forth, and finally people in the galaxy were getting really upset, and they called a peace treaty at a planet called Hatona in the Andromeda group, and they decided that they would make proto beings in the terraforming, because a lot of different people species were interested in terraforming and settling the Earth. And the Dracos had been here a million years before the humanoids, because they had put the moon in place and settled on Lemuria, and their dinosaurs, which was their beef, were all over and so forth. That was way before the Atlans came to Atlantis, or the Maldekans came to the Gobi Desert. And so, but in any case, every ET species that had something going on Earth could put into this proto-human. And so the one reptilian species and 12 humanoid species contributed genes. The reptilian species gave us our brain stems, fight or flight, automatic regulation, all that, thinking, and each group thought this part's going to be dominant, and so forth. And so we have different contributions, and Homo erectus was the being that then evolved from the proto being in the African area.
Okay.
We know that the small people, probably the Greys of some kind, have rescued and taken care of the Zuni and the Hopi and the people of North America. We know that the Chinese, there were people that crashed in China. We know there was a major Stargate ways of getting really easily from Venus to Earth. Matter of fact, the city that just burned down in Earth was where the Venusians regularly come here. Countless individuals and small groups of ETs, as well as organized larger groups, have interacted with Earth and made babies with us and taken us aboard and used our genetics. Lots and lots. Some have been invasions. Some have been like the people from Serpa who came. They did an exchange. 12 Americans went to Serpa in the Zeta Reticular group, and they sent an ambassador and a technician to help us make our anti-grav craft so we could stand off the Nazis. But the Nazis won anyway because of Project Paperclip, where they brought the Nazis over to take over the military-industrial complex. Well, the Anunnaki have seen all these things going on, especially since Marduk got control of the Earth and started pitting everybody against everybody else. And Nannar came back as Allah, and his agents started fighting Marduk, Satan's agents. But ultimately, Satan was in charge, and he's starting pitting all these different centers of power against each other so that none of them really realize that he's on top. So you have the intelligence services, the oil industry, you have the Western Alliance, you have the Chinese, and all these different, and there's the monetary things, there's the different churches, and all of these things had the hidden hand was Satan, and he has 300 of his Anunnaki followers, and then lots and lots of hybrid in between people like Kissinger that run things like that. No, it's never stopped. ETs have continuously been in touch with Earth, and they're in touch with it right now.
Okay, so now in Tiwanaku in Lake Titicaca, there is a megalithic site there that's very ancient, and there's a wall there that has the heads of different beings, some from this planet, some not. Was that like a place where they met, or a meeting place?
It was a place where people could take off when the Anunnaki knew they were going to have to leave, because Marduk was going to take their space station in the Sinai. They built the second spaceport at Tiwanaku, and the gate to Tiwanaku was called Pumapuka, and they put these heads there. It became a place, first of all, that people later on would come to as a sacred place, but it was basically where people could come in and out. There was an underwater base underneath Lake Titicaca, and also the Indians there, which are really from Southeast Asia, from the Indian area. South American Indians sheltered through Noah's flood on the islands in the middle of Lake Titicaca. And so that's one of the several places where it's a portal. And people keep, to this day, keep coming and going. We have skulls with the elongated heads there.
Yeah.
We have bulls in the museum in Bolivia. There's a bull with written in Akkadian, a Sumerian language, with the symbol of Nimma all over it. There's pictures of Adad, or Viracocha, as he's known. There he landed at Paracas Bay, and at the end of Paracas Bay is a great big symbol of Adad, or Ishtar, as he's known in the east, but he's Viracocha. He was the one that brought the Incas there much later after. But most of the Anunnaki left, and they left Earth mainly to Marduk, Satan.
And they left in 311 BC, right?
Yeah, 311 BC, particularly the Maya. The Maya were spacefaring, and so there's millions of people, and Thoth, or he's known as Kukulcan by the Maya, taught them to be spacefaring. And on the sarcophagus of Lord Pakal, there's actually shows him inside of his capsule. And other informants have told us basically that the Maya are spacefaring. They're rescuing people from the dark fleet bases wherever they can. There's a whole colony of them with Yahweh nowadays, and Yahweh has mellowed out in his now. He's in Kepler 69c, we're told, with which is peopled by Mayans and his staff.
Now, when you tell this story, you know, it challenges people's beliefs, and it can be very scary for people. But you always say at the end, this is going to be great, not to worry. Why do you say that?
Because it already is great, but most people are too locked into whatever they're locked into to not realize it. But from my perspective, everything is absolutely perfect the way it's supposed to be. It couldn't be any better. The challenges that we feel, the suffering that we feel, the pain that we hear are the challenges that we need to. It's the perturbation that we need to bring in this new age, and something beautiful is happening. Can't you feel it? I can, anyhow. Maybe it's only me. I'm happy and I'm glad. And every day I'm thankful that for this life and this experience, and I'm happy. And the only thing that stopped me from being happy before was the imagined future and the dead past.
So... Right. The imagined future and the dead past kept you from being happy. So I'm assuming that means you live in the moment, yes?
Yes.
And you've shaken the God spell, right?
That's right.
And that is probably the two things that have been key to you finding the happy place, correct?
And there's some dynamics of it, that everything that you think ain't you, especially things that bug you or that you overly admire, are resonating parts of you that are just aching to be developed and recognized, and to see how they contributed to protecting your vulnerability, and how if you're aware of them, you won't react to other people, and you can be compassionate and reach for their vulnerability and address yourself to that rather than their defenses.
Right. Okay. So if you were to give people three pieces of advice on how to achieve the same happiness you found, and how to get past all this chaos and this anxiety and stress that society is creating, what would that be?
Dig what you've got, don't sweat what you've not. That's what the Buddha said. Let go of all suffering. What causes suffering is when you want what you ain't got, or when you don't want what you do got. And all you got to do is appreciate what you have. And then it's cornucopia, because you've got what you've got, so you're already okay. And then if you don't get the desire, something you desire, you want, you're still okay. And if you do get it, you're double okay, and it's cornucopia. So you can't lose. All you got to do is appreciate the things there are to appreciate in every moment as much as you possibly can.
Janet, do you agree?
Well, my perspective, and I agree with Sasha, he's been one of my primary teachers, but part of what I learned is through, you know, do my own family of origin and cultural conditioning and religious programming. There's a point you get to when you're doing your own work and going inside and becoming introspective and reflective is that you realize that we made this all up. That at the highest level, we are God, source, universal consciousness, that we have subparts into our subpersonalities, our different avatars, our different lifetimes. This one thing I had there, Errol DeGray said there's only one lifetime. You think of it that way. There's one life. And it's been sectioned into all these lives, and then we think that we're separate, and we think we're Sasha, and we're Deborah, and we're Janet, but there's only one life. So as this one universal consciousness, we decided to make a game. It's just like a computer programmer. We're going to make a game, and we're all going to come down into these avatars. And in one lifetime, you're going to play the villain, and in the other lifetime, you're going to play the hero. And in between, you're all the different the Klein, and you're light and dark, good and bad. But if you watch a play and there's a villain in it, at the end when they're doing the curtain call, the one that gets the biggest applause are the villains, because the villains are the catalyst, and you know, they make things so extreme that you have to make a decision. You can't sit on the fence. You can't be a little bit pregnant. You have to commit yourself to somewhere, and eventually that will come. You have to commit yourself. You can't just be neutral. And so that is what accelerates your growth through these things that we're calling lifetimes. So I've come to that awareness, but, you know, when you come to that awareness, it doesn't stick. And so you come back into this other awareness, and you're having reactions to your own stuff, and you think you've arrived. You think that you're finally got over everything. And then something bigger comes, and it's like, yeah, I'm in the game. I'm in the matrix. You know, I'm still participating in the game. So that's kind of an overview.
So is there a way for us to leave the matrix and not participate in this game?
What do you without think, dying? Sasha? Do you want to answer that? Sasha?
Well, the first thing, yes, can you hear me? One of the insights of existential therapy is that when a person asks a question, there's several things behind it. One is they have a hypothesis, a guess about how the other person's going to answer. That's very interesting. But the most interesting one of all is, what does it mean to that person who asked the question? Okay, so if you would repeat your question, and then say what answer you think we'd give, and then say what your answer to it, and then I'll answer. And the strategy in life is to say, well, before I answer your question, I'd like to know what's your interest in asking that question? Where are you coming from personally?
Me? Why I'm asking that?
Yeah.
Because I have found myself leaving the game, not participating in any of this. Like, I've stepped away. I've lost all my fear. I've had so many bad things happen to me that I've overcome that I'm not afraid of anything anymore. And I just realized that probably about 2 years ago. Nothing scares me. The worst that could happen has happened, and I'm still standing, right? And I'm okay. So the fear is gone. I'm not afraid to take chances or risks. At my age, a lot of people are afraid to take risks or gambles, and I'm not. I'm not afraid. I've done it so many times, it doesn't scare me. If I were to lose everything today and start over tomorrow, I would be fine. And I've lost all sense of materialism. Like, I'm trying to get rid of everything I own. I just don't want stuff. I find it a burden. I find it like it's baggage. Money, I could care less about it. I need it in this world, in this matrix, to survive, right? But I'm trying to find a way to change that dynamic. You know, how can I become self-sufficient the way the natives were and not need any of this infrastructure or any of this matrix that's been created for us to depend on? I'm trying to teach my children how to leave this matrix. I foresee a different life for us. I believe the Native Americans were the closest way to the way we should have been living. I believe we could take lessons from the Six Nations on how they were warring and came together and lived as a peaceful people. I mean, the Founding Fathers didn't go to the Tuscarora for advice for no reason at all. So there's something more we should be looking for, and it's not the stuff in the Matrix. I'm passing the baton off.
Okay.
I love what you're saying about listening to the Native people. I really feel for that. As an anthropologist, you know, I and my colleagues have gone to all over the world and lived with people from every persuasion. When we find that people, whatever their cultural symbols are always able to reach the point that, that the three of us have, no matter how they symbol it. And so that's it. And, you know, we can feel much more connected with Earth if we follow the way of the Native people. It's really stupid to say you can't learn from other people. We have this font of wisdom of these people that somehow survived and kept their wisdom together despite our love of gadgets. And it's time to listen up. And I think it's time to really look at intelligent reparations for people so that they have decent health, education, and life opportunities. It's like terrible the way we have treated everyone that isn't a white, an old white man from the South. Basically, we've got to stop. It's stupidity. We've got to love one another and learn from each other.
Well, I agree. Sorry, Jenna, go ahead.
Okay, let me say a couple things. That goes back to the Anunnaki. The original racism came from the Anunnaki, who were predominantly, you know, tall white people with blonde or light brown and blue or green, very light eyes. And then the people they were, when they were hybridizing with human beings, for the most part, they were brown or black or red. So that was the original. That was the original racism. They thought they were superior. They weren't even human. They were extraterrestrial. And we still have these dynamics acting out to this day. And, you know, I challenge anybody to go back and listen to all the stories that are coming out about, you know, the slavery going back to Washington, holding his slaves and Jefferson. And I spend an evening watching those, and I just start, like, welling up with tears and crying and saying, well, that was an atrocity. But it wasn't that long ago. My great-grandfather fought in the Civil War. My mother's grandfather fought in the Civil War. So, you know, we're just talking 100, whatever it is, years ago. So I'd like to look at that in the second hour, because this is where it originated from, this dominator. We're an advanced species. We're from another planet. There was a point where the Anunnaki had to go underground because the humans realized that they could harm or kill Anunnaki. Of course, they have the ability to revive, but they started making a barrier between themselves. They were very accessible at one point, and they walked among us, but then they started to put on the mask, like you see with the Thoth. And they built cigarettes, and they had the priesthood and the kingships, and they made a decision to withdraw from the earth, but some never left, but a large majority of them left. And after a long war, which resulted in Sodom and Gomorrah and the destruction of you know, most of humanity at that time, they decided to leave the planet and leave it to Marduk to rule. So, and this all is tied into slavery throughout the ages, through the, you know, talking about the royals, why the royals are this bloodline, they're better than us, and all that stuff. So, Sash, do you want to say anything, or Deborah? We have, I guess, 2 minutes before the break.
Yeah. Well, the one thing my entire childhood that I've never understood, I never understood where the concepts of royalty and slavery came from, because Homo erectus didn't deal in those concepts, right? So I've always wondered that. And since I've been a little girl, I've been obsessed with two things, slavery and Native Americans, only to find out when I got older, where I lived and was born is Tuscarora Nation land and the last stop on the Underground Railroad.
So interesting. What did you want to say, Sash? We have two minutes.
So, you know, if you look at the level of civilization in the eastern coast of North America at the time when the English and French and Spanish were coming, you see that the Cherokee Nation was an agriculture nation. They had translated the Bible into Cherokee. The League of the Iroquois, the Hosawani, was a democracy. These are high civilizations working right where the colonists and the people that came from Europe came with this writ, this law that they could kill the people and take the land and the resources of every place that didn't believe in their particular brands of Christianity. This is a license to murder people. This is typical Anunnaki stuff, and they almost wiped themselves out. They had a north-south war where they nuked each other. We are doing the same stupid stuff they are. It's based on hierarchy, domination, who's on top. These are people who will kill to be the one on top, and they boss everyone underneath them. And women have no rights, and kids have even less. And they're cruelty to animals and cruelty to the environment. And it's such an obvious stupidity that people are getting it now, thanks to a little Norwegian girl and murdering policemen, and it brought all this to a head now.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them!
all the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the game to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Alright, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Aloha and we're back. Welcome back to the Sacred Matrix. Once again, I'm Janet Kerr-Lesson with Dr. Sasha Alec-Lesson and Deborah DeFranco. And we're just talking about all kinds of things that are relevant and interesting. Before we get back to our show, I'd like to remind everybody to please go over to the donation button on revolution.radio. And you can make your one-time donation button at the top left link. And then in the middle, there's the Patreon donation button, which is recurring. We do thank you very much for your donation. Okay, so we have another hour to go. What I'd like to do is tie in the ancients to the modern. We have these current issues. The Anunnaki introduced plagues into our system. The Anunnaki introduced slavery into our system. The Anunnaki introduced religion, and they introduced politics. They introduced kings and queens and monarchies and hierarchy. So we're in this Anunnaki reality. We're acting it out. We're still doing the same things that we did before. And Sasha, there was a poem, I don't know if you found it, the past.
Wait a minute, just keep talking for a few minutes. I'm still trying to get it up. My machine's acting up. Just you keep talking, I'll get it in a minute.
Okay, Deborah, what would you like to say? Sasha's finding this poem, which is beautiful, about the past.
So in tying in the past to the present, you know, I have this one question. You know how they define insanity, right? You keep repeating the same behaviors, expecting different results. We as humans keep repeating the same behaviors, expecting different results. Why are we not learning our lessons?
Because we don't have the full history. We have this history that's been warped, manipulated, changed. It's very Orwellian. Whoever are the victors of the war, write the history from their perspective and skew things, and over, we find ourselves doing the same things. And if we had the truth of history, we would be coming to different conclusions, and we could create that utopian society. You know, it's not going to be perfect because then we'll be dead, but it's going to have interesting things to do, but we don't have to be killing each other.
Do you think we'll naturally evolve to that point?
You know, it's a crapshoot right now. We're doing what we can to get the truth out, but what we find is once somebody who's the researcher and the author and gets the truth out and then they die, somebody comes in and takes over the information and warps it and twists it, and it's just everything gets warped over time. I'm not sure why that happens or what's the grand design purpose for that, but I've seen it over and over. You know, research dies, somebody comes in and builds upon their research, but they always twist it. Every time the observer interprets information, there's always a twist from the observer, the one that's doing the observing. So we watched a Beatles thing. So we were the generation that grew up with the Beatles, and then we saw this across the divide, across the universe or something. And it was such a distortion of what we grew up with. We were in the movie theater just cringing, and it was like, oh, they've already just screwed that up. And, you know, it's just been whatever it was at the time, 30 years. Or so imagine 100 years from now, if you survive enough to be remembered, you know, there's certain people that are remembered, like Marilyn Monroe. But will Marilyn Monroe be remembered, you know, 500 years from now or 1,000 years? So we're just a blip in time, and we've got to do as much as we can, because we, and that's why the Anunnaki always succeed, because they don't have these gaps in their history. In fact, they're still here. They didn't die and come back and forth in and out of the cycle of birth, death, rebirth, reincarnation. And so, anyway, that's what we're up against. So, Sasha, did you find what you were looking for?
Yeah, yes, indeed, I did. I'll read it. This is what happened is, wait a minute, something's coming up. Do I want to delete this file? No. Oh, I don't want to delete this file. Why did I do that? In any case, after Yahweh had ordered the Sodom and Gomorrah bombed, because they had gone over to Satan, to Marduk, and Marduk was bringing his soldiers up from Egypt too. So they were doing a pincer from two different directions on the Sinai spaceport. And so Yahweh ordered the end of the Salt Sea nuked, and it became the Dead Sea, and it wiped out Zoar and Sodom and Gomorrah. And they also bombed the spaceport in the Sinai. And so most of the Anunnaki left, and but they left us with their legacy, and they said they'd be back. And so this, and so in retrospect, Enki, the chief scientist Lucifer, dictated this tome to his scribe, who was named Endubskar, and Endubskar wrote down all of this stuff, and it was started with this. Statement by Enki, and I'm going to read it. And Sitchin, of course, got this collection of inscriptions and put it all together, because the end of each inscription was the first line in the next one, and so he was able to put these tablets together. And this is, it was all set off by this one right here. At the end of days, day of judgment there shall be. The earth shall quake, and the rivers change course. Then there shall be a darkness at noon, and a fire in the heavens at night, the day of the returning celestial god, Nibiru, the far-orbiting tenth planet of our solar system, will it be. And who shall survive, and who shall perish? Who shall be rewarded, and who shall be punished? Gods, the astronauts from Nibiru, and men alike. On that day it shall be discovered, for what shall come to pass by what had passed shall be determined, and what was destined shall in a cycle be repeated, and what was fated and only by the heart's will occurring for good or ill shall for judgment come. The record read, the past remembered, the future on prophecy understand. Let the future of the past the judgment be. These are the words of Enki, firstborn of King Anu of Nibiru. And that's a quote from the last book of Enki, The Prophets of an Extraterrestrial God, by Zachariah Sitchin. So, it's interesting. Some of the people we interview say that we've all had thousands and thousands of lives. And in a sense, no matter how you look at it, if you... the wisdom of all humanity has filtered down to us. It's in our Akashic records, in the singularity within, where our singularity meets the experience of the singularity of every being and every molecule in the universe. So it's all there, and it's a good show. I'll turn it over to you, ladies.
I like that. Thank you. It's a long time since I've heard that. So basically, two brothers, Enki and Lil, had a long history, and their clans, they went into tribalism. They had their clans, And by the time they came to the earth and they had children and grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren and so on and so forth, they had divided the earth into two clans, two tribes. And just like the Native Americans that that we talk about here, even they were tribal. They were into tribalism. And for some reason, their tribes, and they were all, you know, originally same tribe probably, were fighting brother against brother, father against child. So what is going on here that we, humanity, keeps dividing and separating? So part of it is our nature, and they have been the powers that be or the Anunnaki. At one point, there were too many Earthlings and not enough Anunnaki, and they were in danger of being eradicated. There were something like 1,000 Anunnaki and probably millions of humans. So they started these systems of divide and conquer, and they kept us so distracted. They shortened our lifetime, our life expectancy. And we're so distracted in these sub-characteristics, and every once in a while they introduce another religion. Like in the 1800s, they introduced Mormonism. And so that's another division of policies and ideas and concepts. And that's another place where people war with each other. And they kill each other. And then in the modern age, they introduce, you know, the New Age religion. So one of their divide and conquer techniques is religion. Okay, so I'm going to pass the talking stick to Deborah. What would you like to say?
Well, I don't believe in organized religion at any level. I'm spiritual, but I realized that most of organized religion is filled with just horrible dogma that just makes you judge and hate people. And I realized that when I was a little girl. Like, I had questions. My mom used to teach Sunday school, and I used to go with her. And I had all these questions for the elders in the church, and not once were they ever answered, ever, with an answer that made any sense. And I hate when you talk to religious people, and their go-to answer is, well, you just have to have faith, right? Faith in what? Because I think when you strip away all the dogma from a religion, the basic tenets are the same of each of them. So that's why I don't understand. I mean, there's been more people killed in the name of God than there has been in wars. So it just, I am floored even today with what's going on in this country. The religious right. I stay out of churches, and you know why? Because I find most of the people that I do not like in society go to church. I find them to be very judgmental, to be very petty. I don't think they're welcoming to people that aren't like them. And I find it very disturbing. I shed religion probably when I was 10 years old. I don't go to church. I won't go to a church. And I am very disturbed when you walk into a church that within the first hour, you're probably asked anywhere from 4 to 8 times for money. All they do is ask for money the whole time you're there. That is so disturbing to me. I'm passing the baton.
This ties into what you're saying. Now, I don't have it up here. There's a couple articles on AquarianRadio.com. Lower cognitive ability linked to noncompliance with social distancing guidelines during the coronavirus outbreak. So there's an article on that. Another one I'm going to go into a little bit more. Conspiracy mentality linked to noncompliance with an official, but not unofficial, coronavirus prevention measure. So what they found is that people with heightened conspiracy mentality, at first they adopt behaviors to prevent the spread of COVID-19, until those behaviors are endorsed by the government. And it seems that we can see that many people are reluctant to follow preventive behaviors precisely because it's being seen as serving the interests of certain industrial or political groups. So this is a divide and conquer. So we come So we've been polarized to the mask wearers and the non-mask wearers. And, but, you know, people are saying, this is my right, this is my right. But one person's rights and where another person begins. So we do have rules and regulations to, you know, help people survive and be kind to each other. So you're supposed to wear a seatbelt, you need a license to drive, you know, those types of, you don't smoke in restaurants anymore, you don't smoke in public, you go outside or something. So there's lots of rules throughout the time, but this has been so politicized because our president won't wear a mask, and he's inspired the president of Brazil, and they've inspired, you know, Boris Johnson in the UK, and so on and so forth. So the whole planet's been polarized, you know, mask and no mask as a political strategy. And we could have knocked this out, you know, 6 months ago had we acted like New Zealand and other countries. There was an article on that where some of these countries had less than 100 deaths. They got on top of it and they knocked it out. But because the mask got politicized, we're going to have millions of people dead before the end of this virus, because the last one, which had about a third of the population, took a run around the planet for about 3 to 4 years. So this is not going to end anytime soon, unless we really start adapting some behaviors and stop politicizing, you know, masks. I mean, that's absolutely absurd. But if you think of it in terms of the Anunnaki or who are the other species, perhaps this is an intentional calling of the planet. Maybe it's by the Anunnaki. Maybe it's by other species, because we have stories now of, you know, the reptoids, reptilians, or Dracos, they were here before the Anunnaki. They went underground due to Nibiru coming through and the devastation that happens with the earth changes. But apparently they're awakened and conscious and they're coming up. And that's one of the hypotheses, is that they want to call the earth's population of all these human beings that have taken over the planet like a bunch of rats. So that might be behind the agenda. But it's not just a speculation. So the Anunnaki, the one of the sons of Enki, known as Nigashita, wrote a book called The Emerald Tablets. And in that, he warns of the interdimensional beings that come in and they shapeshift and they take over the council members. And you think you're talking to, you know, your president, but the president's been taken over by an interdimensional shape-shifting reptilian. And, you know, you wonder with these people that are extremely psychopathic, and there's a difference between a sociopath and a psychopath. The psychopath is quite murderous. He, and, you know, his actions result in people dying. So we have a president whose actions, his intentions were made manifest by his results. And we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people dead, and by the end of this year, you know, it's going to be hundreds of thousands more. So I'm going to pass the talking stick. Sash, you take it, but both are welcome to make comments.
Okay. Yes. Well, you know, as I say, that this is the perturbation or disturbance that is, and some of the good things that come out of that is the realization of our unity as a humanity. How we all facing the same crises of climate, which is exacerbated by the racism that we have. And ultimately, there is another good thing which is coming out of all of this and coming out of something which was a fringe at first, but it really makes a lot of sense. And it's a prepper movement, which is like getting back to what our Native Americans know anyway. And it's like one of the abductions that fascinates me. It's a apocryphal story is about these two. The Grace abducted these two young boys, 12-year-old boys, and they gave them each a stable just filled with horse manure, and gave them each a shovel and said, "You clean up the stable." And one boy just didn't do anything. He just thought it was a stupid job. He didn't do it. The other boy jumped in there and he was digging and shoveling and shoveling. And then they interviewed both these kids, and this one kid said, "Well, with all that horsemen who are in there. There must be a pony somewhere. And it's like that. The prepper movement is our pony. Let's ride it.
The prepper movement is our pony. Yeah, I'm a prepper. I'm teaching my children and my grandchildren to be preppers.
That's right. That's
I was in four. What's that?
What are you prepping for? Are you prepping for an apocalypse?
And no.
What level
what
will
I'm
you
be all what I'm prepping for is for the when the infrastructure is destabilized, right? That's what I've always prepped for. And back in the 80s, what led me to this was we got hit by a hurricane in Houston, and it was one of the worst in history. And we were without infrastructure for 3 weeks. We had no electricity, no water, no gas, no nothing. And no one was prepared. No one. And the neighborhood that we lived in was the last to get our infrastructure back. And that woke me up and made me realize this could all go out one day, right? The electricity could go out one day. I suspect it's going to. Not a matter of if, just when, right? We've already got brownouts all over the world. We've already got electricity issues all over the world. I mean, it's funneled by fossil fuel, which is, you know, speeding up climate change. So I started prepping then. At that point, every time Christmas came around, I asked for prepping supplies. My family thought I was nuts. You know, but I've built a prepping supplies. Like, I've lived out of my house for the last 4 months. I've probably gone to the grocery store maybe four times. And that's only to get fresh food because I didn't have it growing in the garden. Had it not been for that, I probably wouldn't have had to leave this house for months. So that's what I'm prepping for, is to not be dependent on the infrastructure, right? If the worst happens, I'm okay. So, and that's what I'm trying to teach my children. You know, how do you thrive and survive without being dependent on a system? And so,
okay.
And so I'm not prepping for the world to come to an end. I don't think the world's going to come to an end. I don't think the worst is going to happen. Do I think it's going to, the dynamics of the earth, of the planet are going to shift dramatically? Absolutely. Honestly, my personal opinion, and I could be wrong about this, I believe the ET presence is going to make itself known sometime before the end of 2021. And I think it's going to challenge a lot of people's beliefs, right? Because you'll have to go, oh, this isn't what we thought, right? Life is something much different. What do we do? You're going to have two reactions. You're either going to get scared, try to kill yourself, do something because you don't want to face what the reality is, or you're going to embrace it. I hope to be one of those people that embraces it. And I'm not afraid of change. I don't like things being the same. I don't like a routine. You know, I like the new. I like delving into different. I love spending time with a culture that I've never experienced before. I love seeing different dynamics of people and different cultures. And I've moved between cultures. I've had to because of my job in the garment industry. You know, I've traveled all over the world and dealt with many, many different people. And I move between worlds very easily. But I notice when I do it that it's very disturbing to other people. I prefer people who are not like me over people who are like me. Passing the baton.
Okay, Sash.
Yeah, that's the same kind of that. I'm a professional anthropologist. And so what we do and when we're young is we go and live with, totally immerse ourselves in other cultures, eat what they eat, work like they work, live in their language instead of our own language, because language structures your thoughts. And so what we have found is that in every tradition, no matter what the symbols people use, they all, and they can even do that if they're in organized churches. Even in organized churches where most people are bound by dogma, there are reflective people who talk and who live love with each other and are the real thing. I was at UCLA. And we were right across from Marymount College, and the nuns that came there and the priests that came over, they all wound up quitting or getting kicked out, of course. But they were free thinkers, just like us, as radicals at UCLA. And that's it. Enlightenment always stays with you. In psychology, we call it the aware ego or witness. Once you can witness yourself, you're no longer a victim of whatever subpersonality is being evoked at the moment, but you have a reserve that you can step back and observe things and get the bigger picture. And then you're free to choose in a way that you weren't. Prepping is really important, especially out here in Maui. The river rises and you can't get across. The tree falls on the line and you're not going to get electricity. If you don't cut the trees that are overhanging your house, they fall down and break your house. Being a prepper doesn't just mean, it means being able to do a lot of things that have to do with climate change and being able to adapt to the vagaries of changing Earth situations.
Great. Are you complete?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I would love it if we would have continued our growing food like we had envisioned when I first came here 24 years ago. So we've always had the vision of having a conscious community that, kind of lives on and off the grid, but able to sustain ourselves by growing our own food. So that was a wonderful concept. As we got busier and older and wrapped up in technology and doing things like traveling and radio shows, and there was no one home to mind the farm, the crops weren't planted and harvested, and a lot of the vegetation is huge now, and things are overgrown. So, but I hear what you're saying. The only thing that kind of bothers me is that we're, on some level, we're preparing for this apocalypse, and I'd like to bring it from the positive rather than we got to be prepared just in case the world's going to end. And I found myself doing that all through my life. I'll end up buying 10 of something I really like, and I'm going, why am I stocking up like someday they're not going to be available in the store? It's always been in the background, and we've had that all along. We've had stories of the rapture, and I think that might be a primal memory of the original apocalypse with Sodom and Gomorrah. It might be in our DNA. And then we had it in this recent era with, World War II. So I'm just wondering how we can do this from a positive space. This is the goal we're going to, which is growing more natural food, getting our feet and fingers and hands back in the soil, slowing down our lives. And I think that this COVID, at first initially, it slowed us down. We were in our homes. We weren't going outside.
Everything we could do without.
Right. And now we see the COVID is interrupting our distribution, our production of food. So I think we're already in the need for the prepper. And a few more weeks or months, if we keep going this way and we do not curtail this spread of COVID, we're going to see a lot more things become more scarce, including foods. So we're already living in a rock in the middle of the ocean in Maui. We see shortages all the time. We have to wait for the barges to come in. But, I had a hell of a time buying Windex the past 2 weeks. It's like, you never know what's going to end up in a shortage. It's like, I looked on Amazon, it's like $22 for Windex. Now I'm not spending $22 for Windex. So
go spend $2 on vinegar. It'll do the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just using it as an example, right? It's like, oh, okay, now there's a run on Windex, toilet paper, now Windex. So what next, right? And so couldn't find my turkey bacon, finally it came back in. Anyway, there seems to be a run on because our distribution systems are being interrupted, our food growth, production, harvesting, packaging, and getting it on the plane, train, boat, truck, whatever. So I think we're already there. And since nobody's doing anything, we don't have any kind of leadership from the top saying we need to establish these protocols. You know, we're on a train that's going down a mountain and the brakes aren't working.
I know.
So we really need to do something. I mean, don't just sit there. Do something. And not running around saying, don't wear a mask, don't wear a mask. It's my right, my freedom to kill you. You don't have the right to kill me. You don't have the right to kill anybody else. Put on a freaking mask. Wear a shield if you got COVID or COPD. You can't. Yeah, you can wear a shield. You can wear a shield and a mask. You know, do something. But making that an argument, and some people are getting killed over it all. They're getting hurt and killed over mask, not mask. This is an intentional. Yet another Anunnaki. And by the way, I just want to say this one thing. If you're a billionaire or a millionaire over X, I'm not sure. Let's just say you have over 10 million. I'm just picking that out of the air. But, you know, to get to that club where you're a millionaire, you have to sell your soul to the devil, so to speak. Because, you know, they're not letting me, you, and average Joe get filthy rich. And the people that are celebrities, a lot of them have been seen at Bohemian Grove, and they're in these different religions. They try to sell your soul, like Scientology. You know, so there's something going on that we really need to look at. Okay, I've talked enough. Next person. Who wants it?
I would say something about deprogramming is like one of the things about the religion of your nursing religion is it's really hard to get out of it. One person that I worked with for many years, he had, you know, his whole childhood was having to be Jesus at the seven stations of torture as Jesus had to go down the street in Jerusalem before he was executed. And this is such heavy programming about life and how you are. And part of the programming is it's called the antivirus. And you're trained that the other people with the other varieties of religion are like a disease, and you must never fall for that, and so forth. And so there, people are, in a way, programmed. But something else happens. Something beautiful happens in cathedrals. Something beautiful happens when people sing or pray together. In the churches, some of the churches I've been to, what I see as an anthropologist is people that enjoy each other's company, enjoying that company. And in the Methodist Church in Fiji I went to, everybody hugs everybody after most of the ceremonies, except for the public confessional, where everybody slinks away. But it doesn't have to. There's always people in every tradition who transcend the limits and reach a place of consciousness and contemplation. And so I think it's important to realize that underneath what you can do is imagine a place where you felt a spiritual experience, wherever it was, however it was, in the woods, in a church, doesn't matter. But if it was in a house of worship that's programming you, you can imagine you go out of that place, walk out of it, you're a little kid in your little kid body maybe, and you walk out, and then you burn, in your mind, you burn that cathedral or that synagogue. And if it's a false preacher, you burn him too. It won't really hurt. It's just imagination. And you walk outside and you take with you the spiritual experience, that real luminous experience that you really had while you were in nature or in that church. You didn't lose that. That's real. And when you come out, you can ask, who is my guide now? Do I need a guide besides myself? Is it Kuan Yin? Is it the personage that was in the church that minister said to worship. You see if you have another guide, but you let that other one burn, and that's psychosynthetically burning it, so it no longer has its hold on you, and you're free, and you can send your donations to Revolution Radio.
That was good, Sasha.
He's hilarious. Back to you, Deborah.
So, you know, I think New York, where I live, is an example of how COVID should be handled at this point across the country. We now have only 8 states where the numbers are going down, New York being one of them. And we were one of the worst epicenters, you know, when I got back here in April. And one of the reasons why we were able to tackle this, we're open. We're just this past week, they've allowed us to go inside of restaurants, but we're still doing the things we're supposed to do to make sure this thing doesn't raise its ugly head again. We still wear masks. New Yorkers stayed home. Like, I've known this place my whole life. I've never seen empty streets in New York ever. We stayed home. We stayed home in our houses. We didn't go out unless we had to. You didn't see us having parties or bars or none of that. We did what we were supposed to do. We followed the governor's instructions. And look where we are today. All the other, 42 states are now entering the space where we were 4 months ago, 3 months ago. So take lessons from this. It's, you know, wearing a mask, I'm going to say this to people. It's not for you. It's to protect the people around you. So stop being so arrogant that you think you're so special that you don't need to care about the guy next to you. I'm passing the baton. Sorry, I had to get that out. I'm venting.
I know. let's see. What else can we talk about? Let me go back to the show page. I gathered some articles. 1 second. I moved away from it. Where is it? There it is. Over here. I hope that's on it. Hold on. Shouldn't wander off.
And I want to say this. Today's totals globally in death from COVID is 500,000 people. So all of you saying that this isn't any worse than the flu, go stuff it.
Yeah, go stuff it. I agree.
If you want to die, you don't have to kill other people. And if you die, we still love you and forgive you and rest in peace.
Yeah. Well, it does seem very suicidal. I was reading an article where, you know, they all come in my inbox when I wake up. It's like, bang, 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 bang. And, you know, the world's been busy writing articles. And I wake up and I'm over here 6 hours behind. And this man, you know, he defied everything. His daughter's saying, you know, Dad, you're going to die. And he was compromised. His immune system, or he had pre-conditions. Her dad just refused to wear a mask, and then he caught it. And these people, when they catch it, a lot of them, you know, we think in terms of, oh, you'll get it and you have this time. No, they don't have much time. You know, they're dead in 10 days, right? They're in the hospital. There's goodbyes. They get dropped off at the door. The family's not allowed in. They try to Facebook, FaceTime, and, you know, do all these with phones. But, you know, there's just a day you call in and they could be fine. In the morning, you call in and they've got the, what do you call it, when they put the tube down them, and they're gone. Not many of them come off of that. Some of them have, even people over 100 have survived. But we don't know why one person lives and the other person dies. I don't know. We don't have that information yet. So it was very sad for the daughter. She was angry at her father. And it's not how you want to pass, you know, from this planet. And it was totally preventable. So what is that, Dr. Lesson, who is a psychotherapist? What is it that people that are acting so suicidal?
Obviously, we it's part of the Republican cult to be like the president, and this is the it's a suicide cult like Jim Jones. Drink the Kool-Aid and take hydrochlorox, medicine the president was suggesting. People who are choosing to die, we need to bless them and not be angry at them. But and I do think we need have every right to demand that they not infect other people. It's also a blessing to be able to not have to interact with people and to be able to follow your rhythm. Contact and withdrawal. You need to interact with other people to get stimuli, and there's lots of ways you can do it. It doesn't have to be face-to-face. And there's withdrawal, where you stop interacting with other people and go inward and reflect. And those are both part of the natural rhythm of life. And I personally have found this really just lovely. I get to spend so much time with my very favorite person in the whole world and a few other people now and then, but it's great. Jen and I get to hang out a lot.
And we're with our cats. They're very interesting little fur people. But let's look at this one step. So it's not that they are happy with just suiciding themselves, but they want to take people with them. So these people that are going out and they know, we've been doing this for 6 months now. They know full well that they're going to go out and get infected and infect other people, and a certain percentage of those are going to die. It's like they're a bunch of suicide bombs, and they've got the COVID bomb strapped on their chest, and they're going to go and breathe it all over everybody and explode it. And, they have these demonstrations on how this passes around. And right now we're seeing the end of this demonstration. It takes, 14 days, and then people start dying. And every day, you said, 500,000. Dr. Lesson, do you have any idea what goes into the psyche of a suicide bomber?
I like that one.
It depends. The jihadists have a belief that, like when a Palestinian girl runs into an Israeli girl on the street of Jerusalem, they have the that they feel like they're trying to give a home to their people. Believe it or not, that is really what they believe. And the boys that die think they get all these virgins when they die if they believe the jihadist stuff. And I don't know where they get all these virgins. That's another problem. But in any case, I don't think there is such a thing as a virgin in that part of the world. But in any case, disrespect for your own life if you take another person's life. And if you're really going to look at things honestly, what is being in the military mean? It means you're getting paid to kill people you don't know, orders of somebody who you don't understand, who's following somebody else's orders, and you kill people. And you, if you start being honest about stuff, you'll see that it comes down to the degree that you disregard other people's consciousness, you're not respecting your own. If you kill somebody, you are haunted in this lifetime and by the persons you kill. I've worked with so many vets. It's different when there's some kind of honorable battle. But when you're doing some terrible thing like bombing and the other person doesn't have a chance, these people are haunted and haunted and haunted. War is the stupidest form of slavery there is. They're all stupid. Debt slavery also drives people crazy. That's a type of slavery, too. Nanar, before he decided on becoming Allah and doing kill people, he tried to do it with credit. He thought, I'll get everybody to be indebted to everybody else, and nobody will want to kill everybody else because they all need everybody else. That was his idea. It didn't work because Marduk was always willing to go to war and kill people. So Allah started killing people, too. But it's all dumb, and it's all based on lack of empathy. And when you're not empathizing with any other people, that means you're not honoring your own vulnerability.
Sasha, what do you think prevents people from being empathetic to others?
I think that they've developed a strategy to survive in a very difficult growing up situation where they weren't loved. And so in order to survive, there's many, many tactics. One tactic for a boy is to be aggressive. Another one is to be a wimpy victim. Another one is to be spiritual. Another one is to space out. Another one that's very common is to move into your intellect. So instead of feeling life, you think life. And so it's very variable these different subpersonalities are. But in a person who reflects, they inevitably find that their defensive personalities, which is what they attack other people for exhibiting, are really just their own defenses against the vulnerability, the feeling of I'm not being loved. And being loved when you're very small comes in very specific ways. When your mother's pregnant with you, being loved means that she isn't upset, that she doesn't drink alcohol, that she doesn't smoke, that she doesn't let anyone hit her. What it means when you're very, very little, it means that your bottom's dry and that you're fed when you're hungry and that you have people to touch and interact with you. And when you're a little bit older, it means that your parents answer your questions as best they can and help you develop your intellect, that they encourage you to be yourself in your own direction at your own pace and not push you into being something else. That's love. And if you don't get that love, you split because you need your parents. You're dependent on them. You've bonded with them and it breaks your little psyche, and you then become a defensive person, and your defensiveness can take all kinds of forms. And if you can always be corrected if you have somebody to help you reflect, or you go on a mountaintop and take some peyote, whatever your method is, you can get over it. But that's how the defensiveness comes. And underneath those defensive people, they're scared little kids, hurt little kids, magic kids that would just love to come out and play with you if you just know how to reach them and not reject them just because they seem so different and obnoxious.
And that ties into this new book by Mary Trump that's coming out on the 14th of July, Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man. And so let me just read an excerpt from here that the Fred Trump, Fred is Donald's father and Mary's grandfather. The family ethos was cheating as a way of life, And they looked at the rest of humanity as monetary pieces. There are stories of Trump and his family sending off the wayward alcohol-addicted son, Donald's older brother, Fred Jr., to the hospital alone on the night he died from a heart attack. He died at the age of 42. And let's see. If you go back in time, Donald Trump could not pass his SATs. One of his teachers said, Professor Wharton, William T. Kelly, said that Donald Trump was the dumbest goddamn student I ever had. So there was something going on because of probably abuse, because abuse adds to your and takes away from your IQ. And
well,
so
his father was very abusive. When you get into that book, that's the one thing that comes out of it, is that father was very abusive to everyone in the family, including his wife.
Right. So what Mary says, Mary's opinion is that Donald's ability to be successful with his father, Fred, who, if you don't know, was a terror of a human being by most every account, according to Mary, Donald's success was simply based on the fact that he was mediocre enough and sociopathic enough to fit into his father's plans. The only reason Donald escaped the same fate that his personality served his father's purpose, same fate as his older brother who died at 42. And that's what sociopaths do. They co-opt others and use them towards their own ends, ruthlessly and efficiently, with no tolerance for dissent or resistance. And Mary is an actual clinical psychologist.
And she explains that while her uncle has all the clinical traits of someone with narcissistic personality disorder, he's even more troubled than that. And a comprehensive breakdown of his mental health landscape would be virtually impossible to achieve.
Wow.
So, anyway, this, when I pre-ordered the book, we're going to do a show on this. But I think sociopathy and psychopathy goes back in time to the Anunnaki and is a trait that can be nurtured and fostered through the previous generation, the people that are taking care of someone. And it seems to be not necessarily genetic, but it's environmental. It's by who raises you, and they create a succession of personalities that are sociopathic, narcissistic, psychopathic. And, okay, we have about, what, 7 minutes left? Sasha, what do you know about sociopaths, psychopaths, and narcissistic personality disorder?
I find it very limiting to apply labels to people that I deal with. I rather deal with the reality of the person as they change before me than to diagnose them and regard them as being this or that. And in a way, you can even see that in a very useful motive movement, the AA movement, when people begin with, my name is Sally and I'm an alcoholic. And it's hard for them to ever be anything but an alcoholic as long as they define themselves. In psychology, once you've come a little bit of a way, you say, if your name's Sally, you say, don't say if you're not Sally. My name's Sally, and I have several aspects. One of them is a part of me that likes substances and behaviors that can alleviate my anxiety. I call it my inner addict, but addict's a pejorative term, so I'll just call it my inner comforter. And the inner comforter comes in when I need to deal with some anxiety, and I've found other ways to use candy when I was a kid, but now all I have to do is do 5 push-ups or say the Lord's Prayer or stand on my head. It doesn't matter what it is, but I do something to slow me down so that I can reflect and say, I've been destabilized. I've gone into a bonding pattern where I'm attacking or retreating from somebody. And that means my vulnerability has been touched off, and I really need to look at that. And if I could talk from my vulnerability, I won't get in these contretemps with other people, but we can care about each other more easily. If I share how I feel hurt or frightened by what's going on, even if that's an irrational hurt or fear. Once I start sharing that, and once other people start sharing that with me, we can be friends.
So, Sasha, looking at the way our country is so divided, what do you think we could do collectively as a people to try and bring it back together? Something an individual could do just day to day to try and get the other side to hear each other. You know, to listen, not just hear, but listen.
I think that's a really good idea. After the Watts riots, us UCLA students went down. We joined a community, and we just sat there and we listened to the people in Watts about what was going on, and we learned stuff, and we learned how we could help. And I think that it's a time for us to ask the Native American people and the people that are living in the difficult conditions, what's going on from their perspective and what they how they would like us to interact. I think that's the first step, to recognize them, to say it's okay for you people to be angry. You can even think of us as representatives of the Howleys, if you want to, and express your anger, because we'll take it, because we know that you have underneath that anger, you are motivated to make the situation better. And so being angry is part of your a good healthy part of your process, and I want to provide a container for you to express that anger and tell me when you know, and as we progress, I'll find out, you know, how it's built and what alternate scenarios we can co-create to get you what you really need that's fueling that anger. And so that's the beginning to talk. The way to start almost anything like this, even to mediate a war, is called unilateral giving. Giving without asking anything in demand. So that, for example, if I were the king of Israel, I would say, let's not fight over the temple and everything. Let's make it international. Everybody in the world can enjoy this place. And we're not asking anything in return. This is our gift to the world. And that's a way to start. When the American and Soviet troops were facing each other on a line and Kennedy said, pull back 5 miles. And pull back? And the Russians were looking like they were the aggressors. And then pretty soon they got the orders, pull back 5 miles too. And you can de-escalate by starting by giving. That's how to start.
Great answer. I like that.
Yeah. So I was at a Truth and Reconciliation event with Marianne Williamson, and it was here in Maui, and she had everybody stand facing someone of a different race and culture, and we all apologized to each other, but it started with the white people, and it was just the most powerful and profound exercise I've ever participated in, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house. So something like that, we'll think about this, but something like that has to happen, because right now too many people are hurting, too many people are dying, and a lot of it is about racism, which started with the Anunnaki 300,000 years ago. Okay, final words to Deborah. Take us on out.
Just be kind to each other is the best thing I can say. Yes. Good night, everybody.
How can we be kind?
Random acts of kindness, right? When you see someone in need, answer that need. Don't ask questions.
That's our thank you very much for listening, everybody. We're really spending and this
picture from Planetary Pooja.
To act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have. Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Ay, please, Dr. Mundi. Hi, Karl Marx here. I am all seriousness today, my friends. There is this show you must not listen to. The ultimate remedy with this guy, LB. This guy has figured me out. I hear it on Tuesday, and he is telling the truth. I mean lies. Stay away from this guy. Where's my good hairbrush? Anybody seen Mama?
Want to learn more about the Marxist agenda and other important stuff? Listen to The Ultimate Remedy with L.B. Bork, Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on Revolution Radio.
Find some comfort at Willow's World.